Hey everybody, Kevin Wilson here. Welcome to a special bonus episode of the Drinking Liberally podcast that was recorded immediately after night two of the Democratic debates. While I wasn't able to be a part of this particular recording, we did have Jeff, Dennis, and Yogs holding down the fort, alongside two great guests, Justin and Jay. Check out what they had to say, and we'll be back later this week with another brand new episode on our usual Friday schedule. Enjoy!
All right, so the second night of debates just wrapped up. It was exactly what we thought. Ten people on a stage is kind of a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
Shout out to Rachel Maddow. Did a really good job in that Amazing second job. Hour. Maybe she should run that the whole time. But Dennis, how'd you feel about it?
It was much better than part one. I think everyone got to make their points. And I don't think anyone really got hurt in this. So this was a much more balanced, people got their points across. I really enjoyed this debate. There's only one person in the debate that I think shouldn't have been there, but we'll get
Well, before
later.
You get there,
yeah.
One of our original guests here when we started off was kind enough to join us again. And I hope he's going to come join us again in the future. But
absolutely.
You want to reintroduce yourself?
All right. So my name is Justin Davis, curriculum specialist, teacher, professor. I'm going to launch right in. So to quote Bernie, he made this statement, and I thought it was pretty awesome for your podcast specifically, was that's what I would do. That's what I've done. And your podcast is called Drinking Liberally. I think I've done that. So, you know, let's launch right in.
What were you drinking?
We've all done that.
We were doing some rosé, my partner and I.
Okay. Yeah.
So nothing crazy.
It was a really nice bottle.
Right. It was a beautiful bottle. Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah, no. What would you grade it? Scale 1 to 10.
1 to 10. I'm going to give it a solid 7. Okay. I mean, we've definitely had better. I think so. But, you know, we've definitely also had worse.
Yeah, well, happens.
I'm going to say 10 people were a lot for this debate. I mean, it was just a lot to focus on. Having watched night one and then again night two, it was a lot to consume. Okay, so I'm not going to lie. I made a literal notes on my iPhone where I'm just going to go down the list. And so number one issue, I should explain my background, I guess.
Yeah, go ahead.
My background is as an educational consumer. I have taught for now 9 years. I've also been a scientist, and you could call that biochemistry. You could call that earth and space science. But I've done all of these fields for upwards of 9 years at this point. And so I consider myself a solid consumer of that kind of research. And one of the first huge issues that I noticed a problem with, and feel free to take this as a forum to discuss, was the greenhouse gas issue. The fact that they're saying that climate change is not a problem, several of them made that claim. I would say the vast majority obviously identified climate change as being a problem, but they didn't really talk about how to attack it as an issue. Yeah. And recently, the EPA just came out with a statement a week ago saying that climate change is no longer fixable in a passive sense. So prior to this, they've mentioned that climate change has been fixable by just using basic carbon sequestration. And what I mean by that is that you could literally just plant trees and take care of our carbon dioxide problem.
Do you know how many
CO2
that would take?
Problem. So it was going to take about 3.8 billion trees.
So we'd all have to plant
three as per a, person. As a nation, as the United States.
Three per person, right?
Right. Yeah. We would have to plant all of these trees, and no longer is that possible. No longer is it feasible.
Yeah.
And so what are we doing to move that problem forward? And I'm going to back off so we can turn this into
a
discussion.
No, I mean, first of all, that wasn't feasible either, because we weren't going to start delivering seeds like Johnny Appleseed and be like, hey, you got to put these three into the forest. I think it was really disappointing that there was nothing addressed tonight about the changes Trump made to the studies. You know, backing down the studies, the time frames to make them look better, to make them look like they weren't such a threat. That wasn't questioned tonight on the debaters. It wasn't brought up independently by the panel.
Nope.
And I think that's really scary, because changing the information that comes out to us on that level is so fucking dangerous. Like, because so many people are just getting that information from that level, right? They're not studying deep into it. You use words there that I'd have to look up, I'm going to be honest. So some of that shit might come to me from the government, unfortunately. So But that's what's so terrifying about that. When they backed down the time frame they were looking at to make it look like it wasn't such a big threat. I think it's a great point. I don't think that was attacked well enough or questioned hard enough.
But I also think that this also explains the reality that we have to deal with. And the reality is AOC's been with the Green New Deal and everything. She's been very out front about that. But the majority of people that we're dealing with, I don't want to say they're not serious about this, but what we need to do to really address climate change is a massive effort, a massive lift. And I think most people are just really not prepared to try to sell that to the American people. And we're being sold this kind of like, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But well, very few people are really saying, you don't understand, we need an incredible fundamental change in how we do things.
You seem to be pretty well versed on what's actually happening. If you had to pitch this in a way that was consumable, how would you attack that?
So as far as the carbon sequestration issue, which again, to break down, is really just saying that, you know, there's these objects, these things like trees, rocks, the water even, that can take carbon dioxide out of the air, these greenhouse gases, if you will, and really take them away from this huge crisis of global warming. If we're talking about the average consumer, right, the person that is spending time, what can I do in my daily life?
Right.
This is the person that can literally just turn off their air conditioner for an hour. This is the person that can say, you know what, I'm going to put two or three plants out on my deck. This is the person that can say, you know what, I have this mulched garden, I'm going to add 10 or 15 rocks to. And you are seriously contributing to the issue that we have at hand. And it's literally that simple, because these objects, without getting too scientific, can literally pull carbon dioxide out of our atmosphere, literally just strip it.
Right.
I mean,
yeah. And the scariest thing about this is what you just told us is so simple, and our current administration is going as hard as they can the other way.
Right. Yeah. They're literally hiding this information.
They do not want you to know
and,
it.
And never mind hiding it. They're literally saying it's not true.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the real issue is, oh, this problem isn't really a problem. People are making it up. No, we're not. Plants, if you think of the plants that you have out on your deck right now, you talk to them for a day, you give them some sparkling water, you know, water that's been given carbon dioxide.
They move.
They grow at a significantly crazier rate than the plants that you would just leave by themselves to grow.
Mm-hmm. I think this administration is trying to make it think like you go drop a seed in the ground and you got to grow a 500-year-old oak tree overnight, right?
Right, and it's
not
these impossible things that
so they make
the average consumer sits and says, I can't do that, so how can I help?
Yeah, they drill it to the ridiculous so you don't have a thing. And what kind of surprised me tonight, I don't want to attack Biden right away, but like when that conversation came up about climate change and the fact that he didn't bring up just the stuff that Trump stripped from the Obama policies was incredible to me.
Yeah.
When he wasn't just like, I'll just reenact everything we did 4 years ago that was really making a difference here. And oh, by the way, you've cost more jobs in the auto industry than Obama did with these things.
Yeah,
this wasn't a, you guys were like Republicans were crying, this is going to end the auto industry. And it didn't. And now more jobs have been lost in there. And we're now polluting more.
Is this really just like, at the end of the day, because is this really just a matter of the Republican Party catering to fossil fuels industry and just doing whatever they say? Is that really all this is? Because you're saying, like you said, like they're lying about this. They're trying to keep this information hidden. They're not trying to kill humanity. So like what's the point here?
No.
Like,
I mean, don't get crazy here. It's super simple. The point is profit.
Yep.
They are sitting on their ivory tower, if you will, saying that, you know what, I'm making all of this money from these simple little things that our consumers should be fighting, but they're not. And so you know what? If you're not fighting this thing, let me profit off of it.
Yeah.
The scary thing about the Trump administration right now is they're doing everything to kind of hide that information, what he just told us.
Right.
Not the overall stuff. I mean, that's scary too, but it's how easy it is to make a significant difference. So we're not looking at, hey guys, if we don't fix this in 12 years, we're fucked.
Right.
Now, maybe if we start doing some of the stuff he said, now it's, we have to have a plan in 22 years and we have a little bit more time to put the right people in power to do that. That's mm-hmm. a big difference. They don't want that.
But that plan in 22 years now has some foundation to it,
yeah,
right?
Right.
And we're so we've got a following. We've got a group of people who have already made change mm-hmm. and who are committed to making some change,
yeah.
right? I mean, they've already signed into that space. And so we can get people. Getting away from the climate change, though, because, you know, we had a crazy debate tonight.
Yeah.
There were so many things that went on. Let's talk about the, and I pointed this out to you guys during the actual debate, but this Biden and his student loan forgiveness. As I signed off when I first met you guys,
yeah.
I was really into this. Okay, you know, I'm fairly young. I'm a 26-year-old teacher, curriculum specialist, professor. Let's talk about this loan forgiveness because it's real in my life.
Yeah.
Come on. I'm curious to think.
I mean, it doesn't affect me personally, so I'm...
Same.
Let me tell you. When you're looking at a six-figure loan forgiveness okay. slash whatever that program ends up being...
No, we want to hear this. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
He talked about this $25,000 number, and I thought to myself, and I turned to my partner even, and I talked to you guys. Who the... sorry.
No.
Who is...
No, we can swear on this platform.
Who is sitting at, having gone and finished a complete 4 years, myself, 9 years in education.
Impossible.
Who is sitting at $25,000 salary or less? And let's be realistic. I'm going to sound like a snob for a bit, but the majority of my friends have completed this and they're making over $25,000. So this right. plan of Biden's is not going to make literally any difference to their lives.
I'll tell you where it's at. I grew up in Michigan. I actually, when I did for a small period of time attend college, it was going to be for education. And that was basically
Thank
your
you.
Starting salary if you were not willing to go to some of the higher risk areas, some of the inner city areas. That was basically the number. To put that on anywhere else is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Like, as soon as I heard that, I was like, I mean, you're basically cutting a corner of our country out, right? Maybe Ohio, Michigan, mm-hmm. Wisconsin, maybe Pennsylvania, but probably not, because those salaries aren't going to work if you start getting coastal. You're not living there. You can't. You're not
literally, you cannot.
You're not living in a lobby of a building at $25,000.
One of the big issues I have with that number, and I realize it may be arbitrary. It may very well not be arbitrary. But one of the issues I have with that number is that who realistically living in many areas, many metropolitan areas around the country, is making that number or less?
Yep.
And has a significant student loan debt where they are in this crisis. I'll speak for myself. Myself, I pay well over $1,400 a month in student loan payments.
Wow.
Yeah.
And really, we're just chinking.
Oh, yeah.
We're oh, that's literally a, just chinking that armor.
It's a mortgage. I mean,
that's not body of armor is going nowhere for the next 30 years.
Yeah. And I don't want to jump in on your payments.
No, go ahead.
But that's not you paying $1,400 a month to get ahead of it, right?
Oh no, that's
or to buy back the interest.
That's $1,350 of interest, $50 towards the actual loan. Wow. I mean, if you're being realistic, made that number up. You're talking literally $109.
Yeah.
Against the loan itself, the rest, the balance of that number, that $1,400, you're talking $109 of principal. The rest is literally just interest.
Can I ask you a question? If
you go for it,
then buy a car, get a house.
Oh, my gosh.
You pay all the payments on time. You get your credit score really up. Can you refinance that?
Absolutely not.
Right. You're just stuck.
No.
And I think that got brought up tonight.
It's disgusting.
And to be fair,
not to stand Pete by any means, but that was one of the big things he said. He's like, that should be able to be it. He's like, maybe we can't erase it. Because I think erasing it's so idealistic, and I think it's fantastic, and we can definitely afford it. If you can put that tax on the 1% and Wall Street and figure it out. Oh, fantastic. We got to figure it out then going forward. I get erasing the past. We got to figure out colleges then going forward.
Yeah.
But I do think the ability to refinance that, if you do figure out a better way to pay that off, is huge. Oh. Like, you shouldn't be just stuck to the, this is Sally Mae and this is what you pay.
Any idea, that's like, me. What the interest rates are on these loans? Like a typical student loan?
I don't know.
Loan?
A typical now, because I've been so far removed.
Yeah.
And thankfully, a lot of my graduate education has been paid for. It's been covered. Uh-huh. But when I was an undergraduate, we were looking at 9, 10,
nuts.
14,
you're not
17.
Paying
you can't
real.
Handle it. And the reality is that as an undergraduate, you know, we're in a climate, we're in a space in which you need that undergraduate degree. You
right.
can't,
yeah, no.
You can't reasonably succeed outside of a lot of other factors. You can't reasonably succeed without that undergraduate degree, but you're looking at literally the minimum being 8.8, 7.9, 10.2. And you're looking at some higher ends where the families can barely get the credit qualifier where they're sitting at 17, 18, 22, 25.
So you're in Pennsylvania.
I am.
Let's say you get through all of that and you're not in Philly. You go to Reading.
Sure.
And you get a teaching job there. And your interest rates.
So you're 11, a starting teacher.
Right. You're okay. 11% in Reading. How?
Okay. Your starting salary as a teacher in Reading is somewhere in the 36, 37, 39.
So what? You're
grossing a week. You're making 900. So every 2 weeks. I'm sorry. You're making, once taxes are taken out, you're netting 9, 10, 10, 50.
So you're paying that off
maybe
in 15 years, 20?
15, 20. You're talking 30. And that's with the programs
that
are in
that
place
be a
right
mortgage
now.
Yeah.
In the worst case.
Absolutely.
You're talking programs that have national teacher loan forgiveness. I mean, you pay off for 10 years, you make your payments on time in full, and they'll erase the rest. But by 10 years, you've already paid. If you have
$100,000,
I don't honestly know.
This is disgusting.
But if you've made those payments, you had $100,000 worth of debt, which is pretty typical for a teacher. You've paid already. At that point where you get that loan forgiveness, you've paid 79, 81, 82. And so, seriously, excuse my language, but what the fuck are we doing?
Was there anyone?
You're giving me 19 off? Great. You know what? Thank you. But where the hell were you when I was paying that first $10,000?
Yeah. Like it up front,
seriously.
Right?
You mentioned Biden. Was there anyone that actually addressed this in this debate? Did anyone actually speak to this?
No one that I
solution.
Noticed, and I don't want to be this one voice.
No, it's fine.
All.
No, go for it, man.
I was very sucked into that at the end. I hadn't noticed anybody that really mentioned specific policy, mentioning what we were going to do with these people that had these scenarios,
right.
And what we're going to take that and do with it in that first 100 days.
The only one I saw,
I think when it came out, when people just like under a certain income level, we're going to take care of it, but we're not going to give free college for we're not paying for billionaires' kids to go to college.
Well,
right.
Yeah, it was
Mayor
Pete.
I keep going back to that, but that's the one answer I heard on that.
Yeah, his point is he doesn't want general taxpayer money
to subsidize the
tuition for the super rich. So he doesn't want it to be just a thing where it just goes across the board.
Because that's ridiculous.
And I think that was free college for all across the board. What I was really
looking for as a consumer
of this information, what I was really looking for were some metrics.
Yeah.
And maybe this wasn't the right forum for
those metrics. Yeah, with 10 people on the stage, that's
right. And it gets back to my original point of the 10 people was, whoa.
Yeah.
But as a consumer of this information, what I really was looking for were some metrics of this information where we say, okay, you know what? If you make your family, your household makes over $150,000,
right.
Your child will go to school for X number of dollars. And I realize that's somewhat unrealistic. I was looking for something leading into that. And I really want to switch this discussion over to Kamala Harris. Holy shit!
She killed it.
Whoa!
Rock.
I mean, come on.
Fire.
She killed it.
Fire.
She, for me, and you guys may have different opinions.
No, dope.
And my partner definitely has different opinions. He mentioned.
You want to
And
fan?
I'm going to 100% switch this over soon.
Yes. Yeah.
But I came into this as somebody who was like, Kamala Harris?
What's
her
name? What? I haven't pronounced her name.
And I and I literally walked out of it. Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Okay, you're literally on my radar only because as a prosecutor, you did your job. You showed up.
Yep.
You showed up in a way that I feel, and this is just my opinion, of course.
No, it's good.
I feel no one else did. Mm-hmm. You showed up in a way that several of the candidates up there sat there dumbfounded.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you challenged their responses or their positions. And that is the candidate. When we look back at the Barack Obama inspirational candidate,
yep.
That is the candidate who I want to say, I'm going to the polls for this person. And I'm going to turn this over to my partner.
Just real quick on that note.
Yeah, you got it.
Kamala Harris was not fucking around tonight.
No,
I don't know a better way to say that without swearing. We watched her in the town halls.
Yep.
And on this podcast, we discussed about the fact that we felt she just didn't answer anything.
I was very
disappointed. It was a lot of, that's a great question. We should definitely attack that.
Yeah, we'll have a committee
we're gonna
to investigate
an answer.
This.
Yeah, we're going to investigate that. Tonight,
we'll
she
get
went
back
through the
to you.
Throat.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what. On a stage, and we're talking a lot about, you know, having another white man as a president, having another man as a president. Not only did she own that stage, she owned everybody on that stage.
Yeah.
And
very impressive.
The people that I support and am behind, like, I don't care who was on that stage tonight. Elizabeth Warren could have been on there. She did a great job the night before. Kamala Harris owned that fucking stage tonight.
Yeah.
She was somebody that stood out. She attacked when she needed to. She did not get overwashed one bit and was the most impressive person I've seen tonight. I don't think it's close.
I'll be honest.
I like your terminology. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I like your terminology of overwash. She did not at any point sit there and say, you're going to come over me. You're
going
to get one on me. She literally just served the ball and nobody could get it back to her.
And to Dennis, to you. You're on the same boat as me.
Same.
We were not impressed after the
not at all.
After the town hall.
Very disappointed with her. And the one thing I'll just say is you say that tonight she was great. I'm telling you from the two debates, she's the most impressive that I've seen in these two debates.
Yeah, yeah.
You have another person here that wants to come in, and especially on this Kamala Harris topic.
You're back in.
Yeah. My name's Jay. Again, I'm a local Jersey City Inn.
Nice.
Welcome
I
back,
the
Jay.
Entire debate tonight and last night. Last night I fell asleep at the very end, to be perfectly honest.
Oh.
Don't
you
feel
let
bad
that
about
happen,
it.
Justin?
I watched the recap, though, this morning.
Don't feel bad about it.
It wasn't as good as tonight.
That was the warm-up. This was the main event.
This was the main event, and I thought it was great. I thought it was very interesting. I thought a lot of people made really good points. I thought it was clear how to separate the winners from the losers, or at least the people who are probably going to close their exploratory committees after this evening. So I think that was
there's
good.
A couple that needs
we
right?
need that. So yeah. I think that was excellent. I think it happened last night, but it really happened tonight.
Yeah.
Did you just do that because of the Explorers Club for Pete? Do you think he's got a guy?
Yeah, because that wouldn't be cool.
I think the mic got passed because you have some feelings on
Harris. Yeah, what do you
think? Well, I mean,
there?
I liked her going into the evening. I liked her even more afterwards. I think that she didn't pull any punches and she wasn't afraid to sort of go after whatever topic or whomever she needed to, and I think that was good. So I think she's, I mean, in the morning, there's no doubt that the papers are going to read that she was the obvious winner.
Yeah.
I think that Bernie and Biden held their own, but that was expected. I don't think they did anything. I'm not walking away like, oh my God, I can't believe they said that. That was so great.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not impressed by stuff like that because they're as good as they were. I'm more impressed by somebody who was better than they were before. And, you know, you guys have made points earlier about her opportunities in the past. Obviously, her team has sat around and said, like, this is what we need to work on. This is what we need to get better at. And she got better at those things. So,
oh, no, she came back throwing heat.
Right. Yeah. You have to respect that. If she's,
absolutely.
I mean, if her team is going to sit around and tell her, I need you to get better at this, and she does, well, then as a leader, like, that's a really good quality to have as she moves into, you know, maybe an executive position in the country, then she's going to have people around her that are telling her, hey, we need you to do a little more of this, do a little more of that. And she's gonna, listen to that and say, yeah, I need to change. I need to be open to that. I can't just be like, this is who I've always been. This is who I'm going
to
be.
Yeah, I mean,
Bernie and Biden.
To that point, we've talked about earlier, you're a fan of crooked media. Mm-hmm. A lot of those guys were with Obama, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we listen to them talk, and we listen to them talk about how collaborative everything is, right? You're not a candidate by yourself. This takes a country. It takes a lot of people. And I really feel like she's got some good people in her corner.
She does.
Because I feel like every question I had about her at that first one got answered tonight. I was like, oh, you heard it. You heard everything that got said.
Mm-hmm.
You got some people in place. And I think that's incredible. Outside of her, who stood out to you tonight?
Well, going back to the leadership point for a second, because we were just talking about that last night, is I don't need somebody who knows everything. I don't need Joe Biden, who's done every single thing that's ever been able to be done and hit every top.
He was very big on it.
I don't need that. What I need is someone who's smart enough to say, listen, I'm going to appoint this person in my cabinet who's also smart at this other thing that maybe I don't know a lot about, and then trust them to inform me and tell me, here's what I think you should do, and here's my direction, so that I can sort of think about that. That, to me, is a leader, somebody who's willing to say, you know more about this than I do, so let's talk about it and come to a collective decision so that we can move forward on what's best. And I think that a lot of the younger candidates are more open to something like that because they can't run on experience. They don't have the experience to run on. So I think that, I mean, Mayor Pete is my guy right now.
Yeah.
And I think that he is smart enough to do something like that. I don't think he pretends to have an answer for every single question.
He had a great night tonight.
Yeah, he had a great night. He did. I agree.
Very happy with it.
And he didn't need to win that 10-person debate.
No.
Harris did.
Yeah.
But he needed not to get blown off the stage.
Right. Which he did. Way more than not get blown off the stage.
Let me ask you, outside of Harris and outside of Pete, was there anybody that kind of surprised you a little bit that you were like, oh? Or you were just like,
no.
Get off the stage.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Everybody else was sort of just, okay, that's fine.
Just like whatever.
Yeah. There was nobody really that I was even watching.
Justin, anybody for you?
So major, I'll say problematic candidate. Somebody I walked into it, as you guys heard, was Biden, and I will say he spent a ton of time, I'll say, Serena Williamsing. He served the ball, set it back, but didn't really do anything with it. It sounded to me like he didn't mention a lot of policy, which is the stuff I was looking for.
Yeah.
And maybe that was just my consumerism, but
I desperately, and Dennis, I'll throw this to you, I desperately do not want Joe Biden be this candidate, and I'm gonna let that sit there. But tonight he wore the Obama cape really well.
Yeah,
I think he was able to throw that out there enough. I think he's smart enough and probably has enough smart people around him to know that this is not his time, because he's getting through these 10-person debates regardless.
Of course
he's gonna have to worry about the one that comes in the beginning of 2020, right? Yeah. Not now.
Yeah.
How'd you feel about Biden's performance? Because I know me and you looked at each other in disgust about six times because he was killing it.
Right. So everyone that listens knows I'm not a big Biden fan. I don't have a big problem with Biden. But my main thing is I thought Biden would get on this stage with 9 other people and that he would have a lot of problems. I thought everyone was going to take shots at him. He for the most part, he wasn't really attacked on the first night. And I thought maybe that was just because he wasn't on stage and they just thought it wouldn't make sense to attack a guy that's not even on the stage. But in this night, I thought they were going to come after him. And I was shocked when he just kept on, like you said, he just kept on getting through and making his points. Anytime anything came his way, he just knocked it right back. No issue. He was smooth. I think there was like one time where he might have got a little frazzled, but
actually,
but, yeah, go ahead.
That time when Harris,
yeah,
producer Yogs here, it was almost like Ivan Drago got cut in the Rocky movies when Harris went at him.
No, I thought Biden actually did well, and well means he just kind of floated above and didn't really, you know, get knocked out per se in this kind of format. But Harris really went at him, and that was a hard exchange.
She didn't lose eye contact one time,
but I was. The problem is this, and I think this is something that Biden's going to have to either fix, work on, or whatever. He's going to have major problems. Is he's going with this Trumpian strategy of never apologize, never saying whatever, right? Because when she confronted him on that busing bill, honestly, if all it would have taken for him to say is, you know what, that was a mistake. It's 30 years. It was such a long time ago, right?
He hasn't said a mistake one time.
And I think he's trying to emulate a Trumpian thing on that, where you never apologize, you never say sorry, you never go on. And he boxed himself into a corner there because he kind of got in this weird exchange with her about how he was basically leaving a policy to a state legislature or a city council over something, and that was a really bad look. He probably will get over that, to be honest, because it'll probably be forgotten, but that was a really, really bad stumble on. Otherwise, would have been a really good night for him, where he just kind of laid low, made a couple of Obama cape comments, like you said, and it would have been completely fine. I'm curious to see in the next few days how bad that hurts him, because that was a horrible exchange for him. Sometimes you got to say sorry. I know the Trump thing to do is not say sorry, but let's be honest. You're not going to be considered a bad guy when your record is strong on other things because you made a bad vote 30 years ago or you supported something 30 years ago. It's something that I think maybe he's also self-conscious about it, because it makes you look like an older guy, you know, older candidate, and you don't want to kind of be like, hey, you know what, that was back then, this is now type of thing. It provides age. But that was an interesting thing about the Biden aspect.
I'm going to throw it back to our guest as we cape for Pete. And I'll just throw this to you. He was probably the one candidate on that stage that's now dealing with something in real time that all these other candidates don't have to, because they're not at that level, right? And that's not it's not a benefit to him. It's not a knock against anybody else, right? But he's on the ground for this stuff. He can't duck from it.
He's executive. Right. Where a lot of people are senators or congress.
Yeah, he's not somebody that can say, I'm throwing it back to the mayor or the senator. He's actually, he had to leave the campaign trail for it. As we were talking about personal attacks, how did you feel Pete handled the stuff with the shooting?
Well, I mean, yes, that's all true, although Marianne Williamson is trying to sell books, so she's trying to do something right now. Yeah. But other than the two of them.
Why was she?
Who are you talking about? Who's that?
Wait. I think she sold a lot of books tonight. She sold a lot of books.
I was waiting for that like Nickelodeon thing where they grab them.
Yeah, with the little hook and pull them off. I thought someone from the crowd like ran up on stage and they were just like, I was expecting her to be gone when the break happened. Wow.
But no, I mean, I think he did okay. I don't think he did great, because he sort of hedged and said, well, we're figuring it out. There's an investigation. I can't say a lot about it, which isn't a great thing to say, even though it's understandable. It'll be interesting to see sort of how that plays out. But, you know, I think a lot of times you run into issues with people who are so intellectual that they have a hard time like humanizing themselves. And that was a criticism of Hillary Clinton back in the day. And so I think that he's not doing a great job of like navigating that line. You know, Kamala Harris was out there in the beginning, like with this gigantic smile on her face, waving with both hands and being like, oh, I'm here, I'm so happy. And he's just sort of like
very measured.
Chill. Right. And I think he needs to break out of that, because people need to feel like you're really in it with me, or you're a part of me, or I'm a part of you. And I don't know that he did a good job of like bringing that across tonight. I think by far he was the smartest person on the stage without a question.
He is the smartest person on the stage.
I don't think there's any doubt.
And I actually asked you guys when we were starting there, I asked if he needed to, it's a bad way to say it, but dumb it down a little bit for the people there. Because, I mean, we know educationally, he's the smartest guy on that stage. It's guy or girl. Not to downplay anybody else's education or to be misogynistic, but we just know, like, I could go up there and do the whole thing in Croatian. We'd be like, hey, great. He could play the piano and sing. Great. So I think that hurts him a little bit. I agree with you. I think he did well. Did anybody else surprise you?
This is very embarrassing. Someone surprised me.
Okay.
But I forgot his name.
Hookin Loper?
Not Swalwell. Oh, Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett.
Yes. Hey, great job by you.
Oh, great save.
Great job by you.
Great save, Jay. Thank you. Thank you for coming in there. So, Michael Bennett, I was like, I don't know who this guy is.
He was one of the white guy with lips.
Yeah, he was one of the...
No lips.
He was one of the white guys.
He had no lips.
No disrespect for white guys. White guys are cool. There's nothing wrong with white guys. But he was out here, and he had some fire to him, and I was actually really impressed with him. I was like, okay.
He was playing in the big boy league, and he...
Yeah.
And he was good.
He was not getting overshadowed. He was like, I'm gonna work here.
Anybody for you? Don't be the author lady.
No, next I'll go to Andrew Yang. I thought that he, listen, if people want to have a,
I like Andrew Lang.
Minimum wage or a minimum, what's it called?
Universal basic income.
Yeah, universal. I'm on board with that, but like, let's get real. That's probably not going to happen. If it could, great. I'm totally, but that's not going to happen. So I think that his ideas, I mean, I like that he pushes people on ideas, but I mean, somebody who doesn't wear a tie, like, you're not going to be the president. So like, come on, show up. I mean, I think that's almost insulting. I'm not as young as some
ties.
People, but like, if you want to be the president, you should be wearing a tie. I'm 41.
So the generation that's coming up that's voting for this, they don't wear ties.
Yeah, but they probably want their president to.
No? Ties are out. No, no. Come on. Come on, Justin. Come on.
All right. So I'll
ties
say
are out.
The number of so as a professor, I interact with a lot of the professionals coming up.
And you're a millennial.
I am. I'm 26 years old. And so the number of kids that I interact with who are in the 19 to 21 range.
They don't wear ties.
I will say they show up to presentations, things like class assignments even. With like at the bare minimum, a bow tie on.
I was made to for like baseball games. No one wanted to wear ties. I wore it.
No one wore a tie.
But yeah, okay. So Yang, he doesn't have a. He's a little.
Let's talk about that real quick.
So
the universal income,
right? So
because I have a, I'll throw it to you. But I have a big thing about this.
Go ahead.
That's gonna happen.
Yes.
Because we're going to age out technology-wise way quicker than retirement-wise.
Yeah.
We're just going to. Like, we're going to get to a point where, you know, the big thing now is let's educate the people to take care of and service these the artificial intelligence that we have to do these things. That's fantastic to say. It's 0% realistic. We're not going to send these people that were putting bumpers on a car. And my dad worked on the line at General Motors for my entire life. I went with him and did it for a year, and I realized I never want to ever do this. Those jobs, you can't just be like, all right, everybody, college for a year and we're going to be okay. Like, that's not going to happen. So at some point, we're going to have to bridge that gap. There's going to be a 5 to 10 year gap of people that we're going to have to pay because they're not going to be able to just stop what they know and work on robots. Like, yeah. It's just not going to happen. And so I don't mind that. I do think there's a big hole in it. There's a difference between $1,000 a month in Michigan and $1,000 a month in New York City.
True.
So I think there's holes in it. 1,000%. Like, you're going to make people, maybe it's good. You're going to make people move back to the Midwest because that money is going to make more sense at an area in like North Carolina where you can afford housing a little bit cheaper. But that's not where we're going as a country. People are going to the coasts. They're going to the coast for money and for better opportunities. So I do think that's going to happen, though. We can't get rid of that.
Yeah, but I think UBI is a really big thing for me. So my father worked at AT&T and Bell Labs and all these places, and his job was to basically automate people out of their jobs. I'm a software engineer. My job is to automate other people out of their jobs. It
make sense not to.
It saves money. It's just the fact of what we do.
And it's also a better way to do it.
Right. It's more efficient. It's faster. And so the one side thing I got to put out here is Swalwell was out here. And the point it made me like roll my eyes as hard as I possibly could is this whole thing came up. And Swalwell's like, oh, well, technology and AI and all these things, we need this technology to create jobs as opposed to remove jobs. And that's just not
the numbers aren't there.
Right. That's not factual. And in every major change we've had in our in industry and everything, there's when you've automated jobs out, there's been a new kind of industry that came in and there were new jobs that were created. But if Swalwell really thinks that that's just how it's going to be, that we're going to have, you know, new technologies and new industries and AI, but we're going to create jobs for that's going to fill that gap.
No, it's not an equal thing.
It's not happening. And it's just a dream. It's a pipe dream. It's ridiculous.
Justin rolls eyes a little bit.
Go ahead.
Okay, so from the educator standpoint, you know, we spend all of this time, and I might educate a class of, say, 20 soon to be managers, soon to be software engineers, they're going to manage 800 people out of positions. I'm completely made that number up, but say 200 people out of their positions. And we're not creating the space where you said, where, you know, somebody like your father is going to go back and fill in these extra 5 to 10 years.
Right.
We're not engineering those spaces. And so what are we doing? What are the candidates that we're speaking to?
Yeah.
The candidates that we're eventually going to vote for doing to fill those spaces? Because otherwise, right, we're going to have these space gaps. And that's great in an area. I'm from Scranton.
Yep.
Somebody that's making $1,000 a month, they can afford their housing.
Yep.
Somebody that lives out here in the greater New York area, the GYA, if you will, they cannot. Off $1,000 a month.
Yeah, those numbers are going to have to be based on cost of living, well, probably at some point. And now you get really tricky.
So that's the only thing I don't know enough about, because I don't necessarily think that the goal of UBI is to say, let's give like enough to support this, like enough to support your housing or enough to support this. I think we need to start somewhere.
Well, it's all housing. So I mean,
that's the problem.
I work in the real estate industry. We have a housing epidemic in this country.
True.
We're in Jersey City right now. Everything that's being built right now is luxury. It's high rise, mid rise. And the thing that a lot of these companies have to do, and I'm very involved in this. So most times, say you build a 500 person apartment building, 10%, unless you buy out of it, which you're allowed to, which is crazy, has to go to affordable housing, right? But those numbers change on a yearly basis. And, you know, we're not close on this, the housing issue. And the big thing people are trying to pass is rent control, but it also doesn't fix it. Because if you bring rent control into a community like Jersey City, say we just passed it tomorrow, rents can't go up more than 1% a year, then the developers stop developing here. It's an easy thing to do, but that also creates a housing issue. So we're really stuck there. That wasn't addressed tonight. It hasn't been addressed at all in this election.
Nope.
The housing issue is as big of a problem in our country as any of these other things we're talking about. Now, others, like we've talked about climate, and way bigger, because those are existential threats that might end us. But, you know, $1,000 a month is a lot different in Kentucky than it is in New Jersey.
I think that's fine, but I'm gonna let Jake go.
I don't understand what makes either of you think that not just a hardcore Republican, but just a moderate conservative would ever vote for something like that. They're never going to do it, even if their constituents are broke, because look at the coal area, right? Those people haven't worked in years. They don't have any money coming in. They keep electing Republicans, and those Republicans keep enacting policies that don't help them. So again, while I would be totally in favor of a universal basic income, I just don't see how you pass that. Because I just don't think that enough people are going to support it. I don't even think that moderate Democrats would support something like that.
Well, I love your point, because Republicans love to, as a history, I'm not saying everybody, to vote against their own self-interest. And if there's not a crystal clear layout of how we're going to get from point A to point B, they're going to stick with what they're doing, right? And, you know, a lot of the coal miners and stuff that's out there voted for Trump because he kept trumpeting that as much as he could, and it's going away. Like, it has to. We have to get rid of that. Like, it's not how we're gonna sustain. I mean, you're probably a little more versed on this than I am. I don't want to talk out of because I don't have enough knowledge on it. But Justin, real quick, like, we're gonna roll with coal
fuel for a while? No. Well, I mean, we're at the tail end of our coal dependency. I mean, within the next 10 years, if we continue on the next 5 years,
it won't make
years.
Financial sense.
Right. Well, never mind financial sense. We just won't have the resources available to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, we're at the very tail end of our coal dependency. We've got to move on.
Yeah. Yeah. But I just think the thing where I disagree with Jay here is we have the example of Alaska and the dividend that they get when it comes to the oil that comes from Alaska. And Alaska is a Republican state, and everyone there is in favor of getting this dividend where everyone gets...
$1,000 a month's a big deal.
They don't get $1,000 a month.
No, I'm saying if that passed.
No, it's huge. There. It's huge. I'm just saying, every citizen in... Every resident in Alaska gets a certain amount. I don't know if it's a monthly or it's a yearly amount that they get. But it is extremely popular in Alaska. Alaska is a Republican state. And this sounds silly, but this is the point where I guess have to agree with this Marianne Williamson lady
we've got to the point.
Yeah, I know. It's spiraling downhill right now. But like it is about selling it. Like they can sell this dividend that everyone gets in Alaska and people don't look at it as a handout. They don't look at it as some terrible thing. They say, oh, I'm a resident of Alaska. We get this oil. I deserve this. And it's a good thing. But when we talk about UBI, everyone's like, well, that's a handout or that's this or it doesn't make sense. And I think if it's framed properly, and again, also, I agree that we have no choice. And eventually, we're going to get to a point where automation and the different industries have changed enough where the employment rate's going to be a certain point where you're just not going to have enough consumers that have money to buy the things that are being produced by automation. And you're going to have to get money into these people's hands somehow. Yeah. So it's going to happen sooner or later. At least that's my opinion. But
have you seen the Simpsons movie?
Yeah.
And you know when they drive to Alaska because they don't have anywhere to go and he just needs to get away and there's a toll booth in the beginning and they give him $1,000 and they say something to the effect of, you know, because we let the oil companies come in and rape our lands, everyone who comes in gets $1,000. I don't disagree that they want the money and that they deserve it.
This is perfect on this.
But I mean, that's an interesting social commentary that, like, yeah, they want the money because they have the resources, but that's not going to apply to places like New Jersey or New York. Or, you know, there's a lot of places where that's not going to apply to. So I don't know. I'd be happy to have that happen. I just think that it's hard to get there. And the people who need it most are the people who are going to vote against it.
Well, I mean, this is the... That's the argument for the Electoral College, right?
Yeah.
Because
get rid of it.
Those people, well, the argument for it is people in Alaska need these votes. And if we just went straight, I mean, they would not blip on the radar. Like, we wouldn't even talk to them. It's just not enough people. I mean, we're talking about now making policy changes for less than 1% of the country. Like, it's a very, very small, very segregated situation for us. And that's the scary thing because you know, Democrats got killed when Hillary didn't go to certain states and didn't go to the right places.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we fix that because I mean, there's no great answer to this, right?
Well, I just think how many times can you let more people vote for someone and that person not become the president?
Well, that's got to go. I mean are we all in agreement that Electoral College is a little
broken? Who was the one that brought it up? Was that
I mean, people did.
No, someone did. They talked about fixing democracy. I know
Harris
did, and I think Pete might have done too. But they talked about fixing our democracy, and that's a fundamental problem.
Pete said that was his number one thing.
Fundamental problem, yeah. Thank you. Fundamental problem with the democracy is the fact that we're devolving into this state where a minority of the country is deciding what the majority does because you have gerrymandering. You have all these different things are in place where it doesn't matter how many people vote for something.
Ohio and Florida probably shouldn't decide our elections.
Right. You can
I hate Ohio.
People go to jail and then you say, okay, they never get to vote again. And then we know how that works with different communities that get affected, you know, by those policies. Well, and you have all these different things where it's like you have one party that drives down the number of people that can vote, and that is their path to winning.
Of course.
And like that's not a democracy.
The minority is never going to easily let go of their power, so that's why getting rid of Electoral College is important but hard to do. But at the end of the day, is it a democracy? If it is, then the people are the ones who get a vote. It doesn't matter where you are or what you're doing. I mean, whatever person gets more votes is the person that wins. I mean, that's the way that it should be.
Can I ask you guys a question? This never came up tonight, at least that I saw. It was the citizenship.
Citizenship question?
Yeah.
Census? Yeah.
It didn't come up tonight, right?
No, I was surprised by that.
Wild.
I was surprised by that.
Because it's now being pushed through. I think Trump came out today and was very upset that it didn't get pushed through by the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about that?
I mean, I think that anything that diminishes participation is bad, no matter what it is. So yeah. If that diminishes participation, then it's automatically bad.
Yeah.
And so I'll piggyback off Jay's statement. Anything that cuts down on the number of people that can participate is inexplicable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the part I was very happy when I found out that the Supreme Court ruled to not allow this question go in. But the fact is, this is not the end of the fight.
No,
this is like a
Trump was
stay
very upset.
Of execution.
Very upset today about
yeah.
that.
And, yeah, and not only did they really just say we're not going to do this now, because the reason that was provided to them they think didn't add up. But on top of that, like you said, the president came out and basically said he's going to try to delay the census altogether
yep.
until this can be settled in a way that basically fits his, you know, what he wants. So
because he doesn't want it to be fixed before 2020.
Right. And so this is a major problem.
The most important thing that's happening that we don't talk about is the judges being put into place. You know, a lot of people sit back and say, well, Trump hasn't done a lot. A lot's been held up. The one thing they've done really well is just sticking judges in places. Supreme Court, we're seeing it now, Roe versus Wade. That's probably, if this continues 4 more years, and let's all be honest, like an incumbent president wins this election 9 times out of 10. That could mean 1 or 2 more judges there, because we got some older people on there. And if they can put 2 more conservative judges in there, everything that we know to be precedent is gone. Like, those are going to get overturned.
Who said tonight that we can rotate judges off the Supreme Court? I've never heard that before, ever.
Bernie, and I know one of Pete's big things was to have 15.
More, right.
Yeah, he wanted to put more on there. I don't know the answer to that. I'm probably not versed enough to know. Climate change is probably our biggest fight. But right now, real time, we can't have these judges decided if you care about our democracy this way, because we're in big trouble.
I think we should wrap this up now. And I'd like to just go around the table here and just say, out of all the candidates you saw tonight, not who's your favorite, but who out of who you saw tonight, actually just include both nights, because this is the first debate, part one and part two. Who is the one candidate that jumped up the most? Like, impressed you from wherever you had them before?
Let's start with our guests.
Yeah, Jay.
Who jumped up the most? Probably Kamala Harris tonight. But I still think that Mayor Pete and Elizabeth Warren are my top people by far.
Justin?
I'll definitely say Kamala Harris definitely jumped. I mean, skyrocketed for me tonight.
Yeah.
I would still stick with my original Biden, Sanders, Warren position, but Kamala has definitely inched her way in there.
I think I'm going to have to go with these guys. I think Harris, out of both nights, was the most impressive from where I had her before to where I have her now. I think, for me, made the huge jump. Yeah. And then I'm not sure I can say yet where she is in my level. Warren and Pete are still, you know, who I like the most, but Harris, she blew me away today.
I mean, not to be a homer, but I think Pete was the only one to get kind of attacked on a personal level of what's actually happening for him, and I was really impressed with the way he handled it. I also think that he had some good quippy one-liners, and I think he did a great job. But Harris wasn't on my radar for this. I really thought vice president at highest for her coming into this, and now I do think she's a legitimate candidate for this, but I think Mayor Pete did a really, really good job today. I think he held serve.
I think politically what was really interesting is you had the Biden-Bernie kind of power factor. Bernie really showed his political skill, which he always does, and that's always going to be a factor in these debates, right? Kamala Harris won today.
I wasn't impressed by Bernie at all.
I'm not saying he was impressive, but he's got a political skill. His message, if you look at his closing
argument. No, he was good. Yeah, no, he was good.
That's the thing is, Bernie's never going to win these debates, but he's going to keep on feeding the Bernie supporters with that kind of rhetoric. Yeah. Because Killer. It's real rhetoric. And that's, I'll say this about Bernie. You can criticize him. He's old. He's this and that. The message he has resonates with people that believe in his message. It's very, very powerful. And he's going to keep doing that. He's going to keep doing what he did tonight.
Trump-esque.
Very much so. In an opposite way. But
yes, I'm not comparing those two.
Exactly.
I'm just saying. Like, yeah. That's
kind of what Pete had kind of mentioned that earlier. And it's actually not a horrible analogy. I think it's true. Kamala won tonight. Warren won yesterday by default because there was no one else on that stage that could even compete with her. Those two.
Not Beto speaking Spanish?
No. Beto's finished. And I hate to say that, but he is.
He didn't climb on anything, though.
No.
That was really good.
Yeah,
I expected him to get on the podium.
I'm going to look. Kamala won tonight easily. Warren yesterday. I'm looking forward a little bit. What I can't wait to see is a stage where you're going to have Warren, Harris, Biden, Beto. Well, not Beto. Biden, Bernie, all together. And I got to see the way that I believe Harris and Warren will take down one of those two. Someone just because of their that's the strategy of this whole thing. Yeah. I actually think that it's going to be fascinating to watch. But tonight is Kamala Harris's night.
As we wrap up, we've seen now two nights of debates. Long shot. I really liked Andrew Yang. I think now only for the fact I think the stage.
You
I, feel nervous? I'm asking that question. I think the stage was too big for him tonight. I think he was quick, just too quick and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I liked what he said.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to long shot Miss Williamson. I'm going to go ahead and say that, seriously, she will have a great series
book
of
career.
She will have a great book career. I was going to say series of novels, but that's not the right term. She will have a great anthology that comes out of this experience, and it'll be fascinating to read.
Dope. Any long shots for you?
Long shot. I like Eric Swalwell for a long shot. I mean, I've seen him in interviews one-on-one, and he really does it. He's very, like, he humanizes himself really easily. I mean, he's like a war vet, and he talks about PTSD.
And he attacked tonight.
Right. And so I don't know that he's going to be the next president, but he's going to be the next something. So yeah. I think I like him.
My long shot, this is, you guys are going to all hate me for this.
We can edit it.
I'll be honest. Night part one, de Blasio came out. No, wait. Hold on. De Blasio.
I thought Yang was going to be booed off the stage.
I thought Williamson was going
to
go.
No. De Blasio is obviously not anyone that anyone wants to see become president. But De Blasio came out. Look, this debate, if you saw everyone interrupting each other, they're all playing the De Blasio game. De Blasio set that standard.
No,
came out and said, I'll interrupt anybody.
He was a hammer.
Everybody.
Yeah, he was
I don't
hammer.
Care who it is.
Okay.
And they came out in this debate and they're like, I'm doing my De Blasio.
Yeah, he might actually be a mayor.
But of course, he's not actually winning. I'm just saying, he was like a laughing stock. And he came out and said, I'm going to get my minutes. I'm going to come out here and say what I got to say. That's all that's all I got to say.
I'm not sure that's...
I got to give Dennis some credit there. What? I didn't think any way in the world I'd be surprised after the author. But incredible content.
Hot takes coming to you.
All right. Producer?
I mean, I didn't know the definition of long shot was a guy that has no shot. But fair enough for your answer.
I actually think Julian Castro actually probably had the best of the two nights. And I think he's going to be on a stage with everybody at some point. I thought he had the best of the 2 days.
All right. So I hope everybody enjoyed the debates. This was pretty cool. We had a great time tonight. And we hope to have you guys back on as guests.
Absolutely.
We got a lot more to talk about with you guys. And, I think you brought a lot to the table here. So,
all right. Thank you for having us. I mean, we were thrilled to be thrust into this opportunity. It was awesome.
So we do the podcast here. We're going to have you back. And we're going to do this for the debates again. So.
Yeah. Excellent. We're looking forward to it.
And that was our initial thoughts on round one of the Democratic debates. Special thanks again to our guests Justin and Jay for joining us. If you want to follow the Drinking Liberally podcast on social media, you can do so on Twitter and Instagram at @drinking_libpod. You can also check out our Facebook page, just search for the Drinking Liberally podcast, or our website at www.drinkingliberallypod.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all next week. Cheers.